And as Trump leaves the building on Air Force One, a helicopter clattering over the trees towards the golf course, and Joe Biden enters the White House, it's time for our weekly Africa report. And on the menu, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni wins a sixth term in office. Imagine Zuma for six terms. Fresh violence in Central African Republic following a rebel uprising. An African Union secures 270 million COVID-19 vaccine doses. Big question, is it enough? Online for comment is convener at the Africa Policy Circle, or APC, Dr. Paul Kariuki. And his Twitter handle at KalenPK. Dr. Kariuki, welcome.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show, and good afternoon to all your listeners.
They echo your greetings. Ugandan President Mr. Museveni doesn't quite get the message. Looks like he's going to be staying in office until he's 102.
Well, you said it, but yeah, all in the signs are right thing there, and we can tell that he's not going home anytime soon. He was quoted just before the elections by sections of media in Uganda saying that he is the best leadership that Uganda will ever have. So that means a lot, because the outcome of the elections proved what he was saying. At the time he was saying it looked like a proverbial statement. But yeah, after his inauguration and as a winner, I think people get to know exactly what he meant. So unfortunately, that has been the trajectory of African leadership for some time, and there's quite serious things to think about where we are heading to as a continent in terms of political leadership.
Yeah, it is tragic in the sense that some of these leaders, the egos become so big that there's room for nobody else in the room. I mean, we saw the campaign of Bobby Wine. Just falling apart. I saw footage of another opposition presidential candidate being arrested in the streets of Kampala, and it didn't make for very good viewing.
Of course, it does not seem to be a useful picture, especially for young people who are aspiring to take politics as a career, when they see things like that, because it starts forming some paradigms in their minds that the only way out of problems and challenges is to get into politics, and when you get into politics, hold on to power as much as you can. So from a modeling point of view, it is not right for a population, especially our young population, to be seeing things like that. But even from a bigger perspective, there is a reason why presidential terms have a period of time that is already predetermined. And I think democracy, in true democracies, is to observe those times and step out when your time is done, because every impactful leadership should be driven by a vision. And when you've done your part of the vision, you step aside and allow others to run the race. And so, unfortunately, in most of our African countries, this does not seem to be the norm. The norm seems to be hold on to power as much as you can, maybe even just do us part. So it complicates our general idea of what democracy is about and what politics are about. And, of course, the ultimate is that citizens get the brunt of such leadership.
No, they certainly do. I mean, I think Mr. Museveni is really arrogant, beyond arrogant, to think that out of several million Ugandans that he is the only person that can rule the country. Uganda is a country with tremendous potential and really good people. So, you know, one wonders whether he's on the same planet as all of us.
Well, that's very debatable. But the bottom line is that whilst it may look like an insurmountable challenge, still, the one of the things that you admire about Ugandan people is their resilience. Mm-hmm. And they have stood out for these difficult times that have led to where they are right now. despite serious provocative situation that could have led even to a civil war. If you think about some other African countries that have gone that route, but they never stood the test. And so the Ugandan people need to be applauded for that, for holding on together. The sense of peace in their country, the sense of direction, and even when it's very, very, very tough, they still held on to those tenets of peace, because if the nation was to be in a situation of war or some other discomfort in a midst of a pandemic, it complicates all matters. And then ultimately, it is not them, it's the elite that will enjoy life, not them. And so I think they made a good choice for being able to be strong under very, very severe conditions of provocation.
No, absolutely. And we go on to the Central African Republic.
Yes.
Fresh violence. Six CAR just can't seem to get it together. They get to the brink of something good and then they just keep on slipping back. It's really sad, isn't it?
It is sad. It has been a chronic problem on that part of our continent, and it seems that it's not abating despite various efforts and some of those what I would call marriages of convenience between rebel groups and the state government. The situation still remains very fragile, and this point in time it's actually exacerbating humanitarian conditions, and there is no possible solution insight at the moment except for calling the warring parties to get back to the table and, you know, talk through these difficulties at the moment. And I think the biggest challenge is for the government at the moment of CAR to see that possibility and return back to the tables of negotiation, despite the provocation that they have received, and they're now retaliating militarily, which does affect the population adversely at the moment.
No, certainly it does. And again, why is CAR in a bad state? It's because of elections. Tudera saying that he won the elections, a poor turnout, threats from armed groups. You can't lay all the blame at his door, because certain rebel groups decided, it seems as if, let's to hell with the election, we'll just have a coup. So it's been really messy, hasn't it?
It has been messy, and this is where the complications of he's caught actually the president is actually caught in between a rock and a hard place. It's one way is to establish sovereignty of the territory by using military power, what he's doing right now, and the implication it has on population as far as humanitarian crisis is concerned, again in the context of a pandemic. And so I hope that there will be an intervention either from the African Union in terms of talks, and also the ECOWAS, the regional economic bloc around the area, so that they can be able to, at least the two major forces plus the government, get to the table and talk through these issues, at least in the meantime to cease war. Because where it's going, it's going to be even, there's possibility that it's going to even escalate. And when it escalates, then it means then humanitarian crisis will even go to the same proportions, which it does not serve anybody's purpose. So I think for me, at where it is right now, I think it's a point where now the African Union leadership need to intervene, not militarily, really, but through negotiation.
Yeah, I mean, and let's hope that something can actually happen there. I mean, as we you know, travel around and look at these African countries, there's so much potential.
Exactly.
You know, once you get past the customs officials and once you get behind the politics, it's such a different story, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that is the sad part, Shafiq. Our continent is very much endowed with possibilities that can lift the continent, entire continent, from throes of poverty, underdevelopment, and all those things. But our leadership, our political leadership, doesn't seem to be very, very much keen to get the continent working, except for the small efforts that we see here and there. Lately, the establishment of the African Trade Agreement, which we still hope that it's going to get off the ground in a way that to bring the envisioned benefits to the continent. But again, if we do not have stability in the continent and we're constantly at war and in conflict, there will be no one willing to do business with us as a continent, and even business inter-African countries will be prohibited to a great extent, because insecurity is a big pillar that can impede effective trading opportunities. So it is imperative that the continent leadership really promotes peace and sustenance of peace to be able to do this other part of the work, which is about coordinated trading activities on the continent that's aimed at improving the economic welfare of African people.
Yeah, you know, as you were talking, a thought crossed my head. We need to find a nice plot of land beside the banks of the Vaal River and build a massive retirement complex, and we can send Museveni, Mnangagwa, all these old leaders can go and live there for the rest of their lives, and we can lock the gates.
There is very powerful reasons behind their staying in power. Some are known and some are not known. But vested interests are the bigger things that will make any political leadership not want to leave, their seat of power. And those are the things that need to be looked into. And I don't think at the moment we have courageous leadership on the continent that can confront those things, because we've seen those members of opposition, not only just in Uganda, but in most other African countries, when they try to raise these issues and vehemently confront these misdemeanors, they get the brunt of the state, and the state gets down to them in a way that is almost violent. To a great extent, they are oppressed. Their family, we've seen, like in Uganda, even the family of the opposition candidate was even caught in between the political difficulties. And that is one of those things that, you know, these opposition aspirants have to constantly weigh between their lives and the lives of their families versus the interest of the masses to get the situation under control and even bring in some change.
Indeed. And on some slightly better news, the African Vaccine Acquisition Task Team, AVAT for short, which was established by the African Union chairperson, Cyril Ramaphosa, I think I know who he is, has secured a provisional 270 million vaccine doses for African countries. And it says at least 50 million COVID-19 doses will be available for the crucial period in Africa from April to June 2021. I'm not a doctor. I know nothing about the numbers, but it looks good on the surface. I can't go any further than that because I'm not a doctor.
I'm on the same boat with you. I'm another doctor. But on the surface, yes, it looks like welcome news, and hopefully that it can be actualized, move from just paper and conversations to actually getting people vaccinated. However, there are still some concerns around access, because not all African countries have the same equal purchasing power. And so one would hope that there'll be a common pool through which the African Union will put a facility available for African countries that are not able to purchase on their own can be assisted from the African point of view, so that we have equal access. And then the other issues, of course, is building the capacity of the African scientists themselves to a great extent so that we can be able to rely on our own. I'm one of those proponents, and of course, being an African social scientist, I believe there is a lot of capacity on our continent to be able to develop these vaccines locally. And so it's time for African political leadership to reprioritize and start thinking about building our own capacity for these epidemics. We had Ebola and others that have been there before. We never took advantage as a continent to develop the scientific capacity to be able to now respond to COVID-19 on our own without relying on the countries from the West, who, of course, are trading with us. This is not just for free. We're paying these things. And if we had invested in our own African capacity, perhaps we could not be in the situation we are in now. So I think on one side, it's a celebratory outcome. But on the other hand, it's also a moment of retrospective and action.
No, absolutely. And I like you saying that you do feel that in Africa we do have the capacity. I would also endorse your viewpoint on that one. We just need to be given the opportunity. And I'm sure Africa could be quite self-sufficient in terms of coping not only with COVID, but as you say, with outbreaks such as Ebola and even malaria from mosquitoes, you know, that kind of stuff.
Certainly. And behind the opportunity, or in addition to opportunity, is a political will to make it work. Because sometimes it appears on the surface that there is no sufficient will to really make it work. In other words, investing in African centers of research that do things like this, and also investing in universities where we can have more African scientists trained to enhance their own capacity to cope with global trends. And so the political will to invest in such things is very important. And of course, to invest even in the lower echelons of education, you know, your post-secondary school education, and of course also at the primary level, where you start emphasizing on careers like this as potential possibilities for students, so that you can start orienting learners from young age of possibilities that are available on them. Pandemic is one issue. We should also be talking on things like space exploration as a continent. We should also be talking on things like invention of electric cars and other things. And we've seen pockets of some things like that in different countries like Nigeria and others. But there is, you know, it just breaks one's heart when you see a clip of news of somebody trying to develop an electric car in some rural place where even the local political leadership does not know, and there's somebody like that. It takes the media to expose the story. You know, so things like that just shows that there is very limited appetite from political leadership to want to invest in things like that. And I think we have the opportunity. It's time for action, but the action must be matched with real political interest to make it work.
Dr. Paul Kariuki, convener, Africa Policy Circle, Twitter handle at KalenPK. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show.
The Weekly African Report in Drive Time.
Making headlines, Milomed doctors in Cape Town appeal to residents to continue adhering to COVID protocols despite the decline in infections. Dr. Peter Beal faces fraud and murder charges as the case heads to the High Court next month. The Weather Service warns that the tropical storm Eloise is picking up speed, and the World Health Organization says that schools should only close as a last resort amid research into whether the new coronavirus variants affect children differently. Those are the headlines. Catch the details at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.